you think? Thank you for sitting up like you did tonight. This group would look rather small if you were all back like you were this morning. I have something on my mind tonight. Is my speaker on? Yes. Can you hear me? I have something on my mind tonight. It's not necessarily a message. I guess I would say it's a confession. The whole message is a confession. When I say it's not necessarily a message, I'm hoping that by speaking this tonight and talking about it, that I can put a desire in, and I wish tonight, I really wish more of our families would be here, because it has to do with family. But I would really wish, or I would really like, to put a desire by my confessions into the hearts of parents and especially fathers tonight concerning their homes. I feel sort of stifled by the lack of a lot of our young married families that are not here tonight. But I'm going to nevertheless go on with it. And before I start, I would like to go to Psalm 137. And I know this is a strange place to start, but I have to speak tonight in my confession. And yet, my thoughts kept turning to this again and again this afternoon. I didn't think about this until this afternoon. Yesterday, as I was meditating, I didn't think too much about, well, I didn't think about this, but this afternoon my thoughts went to the cry of the children of Israel when they were sitting on the banks of Babylon after they had fallen into sin and disobedience, and the Babylonian people came and won the victory over them and took them as captives. And I have often said that this has been one of my favorite verses through my years in the ministry. I mean, my favorite passages, because of where sin can take us. Where sin can take us. But I would like to use it tonight in another way. So I'm going to read from verse 1 to the end of verse 6. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered our home. I'm going to paraphrase a little bit here. When we remembered our home. Do you know, dear people, this evening, that one of the saddest things that we face in a sin-cursed earth is when our children cannot grow up in a happy home? And today, the statistics show us that there's very, very many, many people that grow up that do not know what a blessed home is. Was it you? No. Who was it that was talking about the orphans in Africa? Was that you, James? It's unbelievable what sin can do to our homes. And so it says there that we hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof, for they that carried us away captive required of us a song. And I'm not going to paraphrase it, but I would like to use this somewhat out of its context. I'd like to say this, that the world is out there and they're looking at the Christian home. They want to see something. They want to see a happy spirit come out of that home. I'm convinced of this by people who watch and are fascinated by children who are brought up, may I say, with discipline in the home, the rod being used at times, the Bible way used, and people that are opposing it with all their might are fascinated at homes that are ordered like that. And so the Babylonian people had... Sorry. Don't I have it on? Just a minute. No, I didn't. I'm sorry, Joel.
Now I have it, I believe. As bad as this morning. Where was I? The Babylonian people expected something from the children of Israel that they themselves didn't have. And it tells us here that they wasted us. They required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. In verse 4 it says, how shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? I'm going to say this, my dear brethren and sisters, that in our homes, if we're going to get so closely linked up with the world and its system, our homes are going to suffer tremendous. And that's what turned my mind to this psalm here. Wait till I get this thing hooked up right. To this psalm here is because I saw such a likeness of our homes and what the children of Israel experienced. They said, how shall... And dearly beloved, I believe that the reason that so many of our homes are not happy homes is we've gotten into a strange land. We've learned a lot of the culture. That's not the word I need. But we learned a lot of the things of this world and we implement them into our home and we expect songs of happiness to come out of it. It won't. We need to have our focus on the Lord Jesus Christ and our home centered around Him, which was the only way that it will bring happiness. Let's read on. He says, how shall we... Okay, verse 5. If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. I would like us to know that one of the things... I look at my home and my when I was brought up. I wasn't brought up in an unhappy home. There was a lot of things missing. But I don't remember of just necessarily having an unhappy home. There was times when there was a lot more tension than it should have been. And things maybe that could have been done different. But when I talk to some people and they talk about their home, they have no desire to remember Jerusalem. Now my question to you is this, do your children want to remember Jerusalem or your home? If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth, if I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. All right, now I'm going to get to my confession. I'm going to ask a question tonight. And I'm going to ask for an answer from anyone. What is the greatest thing that you as a father and mother can do for your children or your child? What is the greatest thing that you can do for your child? Now, I know you're going to come up with, you might think of different things, but and I'll hear that, but I have one thing specifically in mind. What is the greatest thing that a father and a mother can do when they have a family that's going to probably be one of the greatest blessings you can ever give your child? Somebody want to answer that? Jake. Right on the first try, Jake. Very much so. As I watch families, I'm convinced that one of the greatest hurts that a family experiences is if the father doesn't love the children's mother or the mother does not love their daddy. One of the greatest securities that you and I can do for our children is to love their mother. Now I'm going to tell you what my confessions are tonight. And this is why I say my confessions. And I'm not going to use a lot of scripture this evening. I paged through lots of verses and I just thought, well, we'll probably have a small group tonight. I didn't know how big. But I would just like to talk very plainly about something that I've experienced in my... And when my wife and I had our 50th anniversary, I thought a lot as I was driving during the day. You know, what could have made those 50 years better? Did you ever think if I could live my life over, I would do it different? Did you ever think of that? Now, I know that sometimes we say, well, no, you wouldn't. You'd do just like you did. Well, that's probably true in some sense. But as I thought about this, and I thought, what would I do different? And tonight, in my time here tonight, I would like to tell you of about, I'm not sure how many I have here. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We'll try to get through 10 things that I feel I would like to do different. That's my confession. Now you say, well, Abner, you must have made a real flop of it. Well, I think the Lord has given Ananias something very wonderful and beautiful. But in my part of it, I feel I could have done much, much to help it be better. That's what I'd like to do. And I'd like to express this both as my confession and as a help to some of you younger ones. After you're married 50 years, you can look back in those 50 years and you can see things that were not quite like they should have been. And so we want to get started. The first one is what Brother Jake said. I have here, I would love my wife more. Now, when I say that, I realize that love doesn't come, how could I say, we can't really define love in much, or yeah, we could say that, I love my wife much or so. But if I were starting my family again, I feel that I would be freer to let my children know that I love their mother. Some of us were brought up in a culture that was hardly ever expressed. I don't know that I don't want to accuse my dad and my mom at all, but I never saw that I remember. Did I see that I can say what I would have called an endearing moment of my dad and mom? Did my dad love my mother? I believe he did. I believe in my heart he did. Did he express it in a way that we children saw it? There I'm stumped. Now you say, well, what do I do so my children know that I love my wife? You know, there's always a challenge to me in this. And that is when we talk about loving our wives, I believe one of the greatest and the most clearest direction that we can find of where we are with our love for our wives is if somehow you can talk to the children and find out what they think. That'll tell a lot. And so my cry for myself, what is the greatest thing that I could have helped my family? What could I do for my child? And I believe that it's to love his mother. In no uncertain terms, with no qualifications, to love his mother. I don't want to bring something sad in here, but I was talking to Brother Willard a little yesterday morning, and what his son is going through, it can't help but be devastating to the children. And there is nothing that will drive your children further and faster. No, I don't want to say nothing. There may be something. But I would say there's very few things that will drive our children further away from the realization of a beautiful love that God has for mankind than when they see that love just being nothing but cold formalism and having to stay together because we don't believe in divorce, and that's how they go through life. And to me, that's grieving. And I couldn't help but think of times that my children could have said, well, Dad, do you love Mom the way you act? And I'd like to challenge us all of that, just in that. You know, our tongue is such a wicked tool. And before we know it, we hurt our wives, and our children hear it. We say things that are not kind. And so the greatest thing that I can do for my child is to love his mother. And the greatest thing a mother can do for her child is to love her husband. I believe that's one of the greatest things that we can do. When a child knows parents love each other, there's a security, there's a stability there that about life that is gained in no other way. You know, I'm blessed. Now, you may think I'm getting rather mushy or intimate or what, but I'm blessed when I see my son-in-laws or my children, married children, and maybe just in passing by, they hug each other, or a husband and wife, and the children don't even take notice of it. To them, it's no surprise. That's what mom and dad do. Well, I'm going to tell you something. If I'd have seen my dad hug my mom, I would have been. My eyes would have got like saucers. And I would have said, what is going on? And so I'm blessed. Now, I'm not saying make a big show of those things. That's not what I'm saying. But I believe it ought to be so common to the children that they expect nothing else. And they use that and they associate that with how that dad loves mom, so dad, and especially the father, because the Bible commands him to love his wife. In fact, it says the wife of your youth. That doesn't matter how old she gets, Willard. Doesn't matter. She was the wife of your youth and you're to love her. And I believe that children find a tremendous security in just that knowledge that mom and dad love each other. And so the first thing that I wanted to talk about was that. And when mother and daddy smile in love, the child will smile back and he'll smile at the world and he'll be a happy child. And then I thought about, well, what is love? Well, love is something that I would seek more special times to be together with my wife. There's one thing as I look back at our life, Ann and I, and that is that we were so busy making a living. And the tension and the tightness, and we were poor for years. And I don't say we're poor anymore, because I feel when I look at other people, we're not. But we were poor. We struggled. We couldn't pay our feed bills. And there was a drive to make a living. And I look back and it wasn't that I didn't love my family. But the family sometimes took second place. And that's what I mean. The love of the father and mother together. The children, they know this. The children know this. They sense it. There's an atmosphere in the home. I have read too many stories of when people were terrible poor, but there was happiness on the hearth. There was happiness. And so, love the wife or the mother of your children. When mother and father join hands as they walk, the children see that, and they want to join hands in love too. And so, all these things may sound sentimental, but then I'm persuaded that we need a lot more of this. I believe we do. I'm not saying a lot of inordinate affection, anything like that, but I'm just saying your children should, without a question, know that dad and mom love each other. And it'll give them a tremendous peace. All right, the second one I'd like to touch on, and I'll just touch on some of these. And like I said, I'm not going to turn to a lot of scriptures tonight. I'm just having an open talk. And this is a good one for me. I have looked at some of our old... When we were married, we weren't supposed to have photos. I often wish... In fact, just today we had company there at our house. And I said to our company, they were looking at some of our photo albums. And I said, I wish that we would have some pictures of long ago. But I destroyed all our pictures because in our church where we were raised, we were not supposed to have them. And I wanted to be obedient, so I burned all the pictures I had from my youth. And now I'd sort of like to see what they look like. And but here's the thing I'd like to say, that I would do more with my children. I have told people already I'd go fishing with them more, but it struck me like this. I would like, if I would live it over again, I'd want to laugh more with my children. You know what I mean? I remember of us driving with our car. We used to have a Chevy Kingswood station wagon. Long, stretched out black vehicle. And we'd have our seven children in there, sitting in this Chevy Kingswood. And it was some of the most enjoyable times. I remember one time my wife and I and three of our daughters, I believe it was, took a trip to Honduras. Traveling together in a van, drove all the way through Mexico, and it was an enjoyable time. And we would laugh at times. But there was too many times when I didn't laugh with children. No, children, the children want that happiness. And if dad is always a dour, the world's coming to an end type of guy, there's no happiness. Because the children follow the example of where mom and dad is, and especially where dad is. I'll tell you a story I might have told you years ago, but I'll never forget how it shocked me. We were working in a bakery. We had the bakery yet. We were working there one morning, and I was used to hearing my daughter sing in the morning in the bakery. Might have been Mary Joan was working there, I don't know. But it used to be rather a happy atmosphere in the bakery a lot of times. And one morning I said to the girls, I said, "What's going on?" I said, "You're all so silent." And one of my daughters said to me, "Daddy, how can we sing and be happy when you're so quiet?" And I had just come back after some church work, and I was feeling miserable about the whole thing. And my daughter said, "How can we be happy, Dad, when you aren't?" That really spoke to me. And so, I don't mean in foolishness, but just laugh more with my children. Oscar Wilde wrote this way, "The best way to make children good is to make them happy." Now, I'm not saying toys and all that kind of stuff. That gets old. But just make them feel at ease. Sometimes you get into a home. I've said I've been in homes already where you could feel it, it felt like you could cut the tension with a knife. It was that much tension. I'm going to tell you something, parents. I grew up in a home where there was often a lot of tension at the table. There was just tension. There was a feeling that the wrong word is going to be spoken and there'll be a blow-up. That is a very unhealthy situation to raise children in. They're going to sense that tension more than you and I think. And especially if there's tension between mom and dad. And so I would laugh more with my children. I think sometimes our children love to laugh. I remember there's pictures that we have. Again, I'll go back to the photo album because that really speaks to me. I was just this evening, I was done with my study and I was sitting out and I looked through some photo albums just to take my memory back. And there's something I noticed that there's a picture in there of, well, there's a couple of them, but of me on my hands and knees and Violet and Anna Joy on my back. I'm this big horse. And I look at their face. And they're just having one great ball of a time. You know, just to be funny sometimes is such a breaker of the tension and the things that children grow up in. But our children tell stories. I was just really touched with, I realized my failings in this. You know, I read one time of a little boy coming to his daddy and he had this scratch on his finger, and he was showing dad this scratch on his finger, and dad just finally, he just said, "Yeah, I know, son." And then the son was sort of hurt, and he said, "Well, what did you want me to say?" Well, he said, "All you could have said was, 'Oh, that would have helped me a lot.'" Just little things like that, you know, that children pick up. And I remember like I said, while we were traveling in the cars at times, I remember one time we were traveling through the West. We did quite some traveling as a family, and I had this big brown or gray bus. Some of you may remember of it. I'm sure Santos remembers of that old gray bus, and because we drove it to Honduras. But we had this bus, and then we put a 20-foot camper behind this bus. And my Dorcas and Anna Joy, and I'm not who sure, Ida, I believe, was along. And we were traveling through the West with Sarah Ann and her family after David had passed away. And we had a lot of fun in that old bus. But one time, I fell asleep back there, and Dorcas was driving this rig. I mean, the bus plus the 20-foot camper right through Denver. And I was sleeping, and I got awake, and I heard cars on both sides, and I piled out of the bed and ran up to the front and tried to take control, and my girls laughed at me, told me to go back to sleep. They're making out all right. But to me, it looked like the greatest danger ever, and we've had a lot of laughs about that since. At that time, I didn't think it was funny. I didn't think Dorcas could handle that rig going through a 4 or 5 lane highway or whatever it was. It was a lot of traffic. So I would laugh more at myself. You know, we laugh when children make mistakes. We laugh sometimes when children go out and they have a toy and maybe they're trying to ride bike and they fall and we laugh. Well, let me tell you something. I got on a bike here some time ago in the store lot. I thought it'd be good for my metabolism, and I started pedaling and I found out I don't have my balance right. It wasn't like it used to be. And so I started going like this, and I went up toward the store, and there's these big iron posts there, and for some reason, I couldn't decide which side of the post to go around, and I went right into it. Flew off the bike and skinned myself up. You know what I did? I laughed because I figured if people would have saw me, they'd have had the biggest joke they ever saw. And sometimes we have to laugh at ourselves. It does the children good when we do that. Just simply that daddy can laugh at his own stupid mistakes. All right, we need to go on. I'm not going to get through some of the things I'd like to speak about. By the way, I didn't trust much getting on the bike since. It's sitting up in the garage. I bought it because I thought it would be good for me, but I don't know. Now, the third one I'd like to think about, I would be a better listener. Oh, dearly beloved parents, fathers, I cheated my children because I didn't listen. Now you say, well, how far do you take that? And I realize children can eat up a lot of your time. But I just really am blessed when I see a father, or I'll just use my son-in-law, Mark Troyer. He is one of the sweetest fathers. And when his children have a question, he'll just take time and listen to what they have. And the question doesn't amount to much. But when you see those little boys walking away from their daddy, you know that they think he's the greatest daddy on this side of eternity. And I have cheated my children because I didn't take time to listen. And so I would be a better listener, I hope. I know I would still be me, but as I learned these things in these years, and I go back again and again to the first one. If mom and dad love each other and work together, a lot of these other things can be waded through. And yet, there are also steps that are going to make the home a better place. I believe that our children, when they leave home, they separate themselves, cleave unto their husband or their wife. That's the Bible. But I believe they should always have fond memories of home. Fond memories of home. And that's going to depend on us, on what we make that home. And so I'd like to be a better listener. I would seek to do that. I would listen when my child has his little hurts. And, you know, my father had a way, and I remember that. And it didn't sit well with me, but my father had a way. He liked his boys to be tough. And he did a lot of things that some other fathers really frowned on to make me and my brother Mike tough. He bought a set of boxing gloves for us, both of us. And then he had this wagon box up in the barn in the wintertime. He'd take us up to that wagon box and put us up in the box, and he'd referee, and we boxed. So we get tough. Well, we got to the place where we could lick every one of our cousins. If our cousins came around and they wanted to box with us, they didn't last but one round. And I'm not saying we were that strong, but we got to the point where we didn't mind getting beat. And, you know, just things like that. Well, my dad was this type of a person that if you hurt yourself and you were going around as a young boy, a child, or you're going around and you were just about falling, you know, and my dad would say, well, what's the matter? I didn't feel anything. Don't do that. Listen to your child. He'll get over it. You don't have to have him all the time. What we used to call schnoopsing, you don't have to do that. But at least sympathize with him a little. I think it could have made a better man out of me if maybe I wouldn't have remembered some of those things. But I think that some of my greatest memories of my father was when I remember that he listened. That he listened. You don't have to say anything. Just listen. Children come up to you. We're busy. Don't bother me now. But they have this little simple question. And sometimes the question is immaterial. Sometimes it's rather even not very bright. But if I could have just listened to my children. Just listened to them more. In listening, I would probably... You know, it's estimated that an average child asks about 500,000 questions by the age of 15. That's estimated now. But an average child. What a privilege for parents to have 500,000 opportunities to share something about the measures of life. What an opportunity to show forth our Savior in a young child's life. They just ask questions because they want to know. Some are much more curious than others. But some don't ask many questions. But you know, one quick way to shut them down is not listen. Just not listen. As fathers, not listening. And so if I had a chance to start over, I would listen more with, may I say, my third ear. You know, that instinct. I'd seek to hear what the child was really feeling and wanting to know when he asked a question. There was something in that child that wanted to know him. By my not listening, I shut him down. And so, I would like to start over again. There's only one of my daughters here tonight. And I thought this afternoon when I was in my study, I would like to have all my daughters here tonight, my son. Because I feel I really botched it up. And my opportunity's gone. But there's some of you here that it isn't. And take and make well use of that opportunity. I believe that a parent who listens to his child in the earlier years will find out that he has a child that will listen to him when he gets older. I think that's very important. Now, the next thing I'd like to think about a little bit is I would like and seek to be more honest. Now you say, what, Abner? You're supposed to be honest. All right, here's what I'm talking about. How many of us parents, when our children make a mistake or they come with a bad grades, how many of us are willing to tell our children, well, son, I know you really just about flunked this spelling, but I had a lot of struggle in spelling too. Or do you leave the impression that you had straight A's all the way through deportment and everything else, never made a boo-boo, and the son just feels, ugh. You see, we're not honest. We're not honest. We give the impression to our children that our childhood was just about perfection. And yet if the child would know, he would probably see that we were far below his grade. I'm saying this, brethren and sisters, because I realize that there is a lot of children that feel very intimidated by what they look at that as their perfect school days of their parents. Now, I'm not saying you have to tell your children all the mischief you got in and the paddlings you got in that. That's not what I'm saying. But let's be careful that we don't set up a portrait of a perfect scholar when we went to school. And now you children, if you just do like I did. Well, I'd like to go back and ask some of our teachers how we did. How we did. You know, my dad was a very, he was a little bit more, I guess I would say, education-minded than a lot of the Amish people were. And he wanted us to have high grades. He wanted us to study. He did not want just mediocre grades. And I often have thanked God that my dad was that way, because I'm not a wise man, but I wonder what I'd have landed up with if I had my own way, because I wasn't disciplined to study. But my father, I found out in later years from my dad's younger brothers some of the shenanigans that my father pulled when he went to school. And I think if my dad would have told me some of those things, I could have just listened a little better to Dad, because he would have felt like he's a little bit more on my ground. But I always thought Dad was just this, he just breezed through school, and he probably did in academics. But in behavior, he certainly didn't. And so, I think we need to be honest with our children and at least confess to them that we made a lot of mistakes. I'm talking school years. This goes on in through life. Be honest with your children. You know, there's a dishonesty that is very subtle, and yet it's very damaging. And that's that type of thing where you pretend to your children that everything, even when you like go to work and you tell them how you did all this work in such a day and you were just always up in time and you were early to bed and early to rise. And I'd like to go back into our homes and see how it really was. But we let that spell to our children, and our children just feel, well, I'll never measure up to Dad's eyes. And I'll tell you something, I would rather be whipped as a child with a whip than have a father that says you'll never amount to anything. Because you're going to hurt that child where that hurt lasts and lasts. The whipping and the smart will go away. In fact, there was times when I got a whipping and I knew I deserved it, that I was relieved, it was over, I was glad it was done, and I had peace. But that's one thing I'll say about my father. I never heard my father degrade me in that way. And it gave me confidence in Dad. And so be honest. Be honest with your children. You know, we sometimes talk about the good old days and we cast reflection on our children and character and the worthiness of our children. They get hope from a confession that their parents fought similar battles. And they get hope from that. But if we always painted that we were up there and they're down here someplace, it's going to be so defeating to them. All right. I guess I spoke about enough on that. But I'd like to talk a little bit about how many of you fathers have said to your children, when the children said, it's dark outside, I'm afraid of the dark. And then the father says, what's the matter with you? There's nothing out there in the dark. Go on out there. You know, I have a story I like to relate. When we lived in Myerstown, there was a grape arbor on our walks. And what it was an arbor all the way. There was a lot grapes that were on this vine. And this arbor was long, and it went out and made a turn and went out through the walks. It was concrete walks, a beautiful home in Myerstown. And this arbor had these grapevines all over. And we had a practice in the wintertime when the fall was, the corn was in, then we would start to eat what we call late supper. We would do the chores, then we'd eat after the chores were done. Because we had lanterns and it was easier to do it in daylight. And I remember very vividly yet, after supper, we call it supper, after supper was over, Mom, we had this German police dog that was out at the barn, tied up close to the one side of the barn. She was a German police dog. I wasn't afraid of the dog. But after supper, my mom would say, Abner, take stuff out to Bess. I remember her name yet. And so I'd have to take this chisel of whatever was left from supper and go out under that horrible grapevine. Now you're saying, you look at me and you say, well, Abner, what was with the grapevine? I don't know. But there was a harmless creatures that dwelled up in that grapevine you ever saw. They weren't there in the daylight. They were just there in the dark. And I would go out through that grapevine with this chisel, and I'd get out there to the dog pen, and I knew and I just dreaded that walk back to the house, because those little goblins always waited till I was going back. And then I would dump it into the dog pen or into the dog's bowl, and I can remember standing there meditating. How am I going to outfox these things? Now you say, Abner, that was stupid. I know it was. But I didn't know it then. Now, here's where we as fathers get in. Listen a little bit. If your son is scared of the dark, or your daughters, there's some reason for that. And I think now, as I think of that, I used to start at the end of that grapevine, and my little Amish feet would go the fastest you ever. I learned to run during those days. Through that grapevine, skitter around the corner and up to the porch and slam up at the door. There was nothing ever got me. But something almost did most of the time. That's imagination in the child. And I believe that when we listen, we can pick this up from our children. And we can help them through it. But it's not going to help just to say, don't, what's the matter with you? Are you cry baby? You know, don't do that. I know I did too much of that to my children. But we have to realize that imagination to the child can be very much. So I just wanted to say that as far as being honest. I think we should be honest with our children. And if they're afraid of the dark, you just get down with Sonny and you just tell him, Sonny, I know what it is. I used to think I heard things. I worked for a neighbor. You may think I was paranoid, but I worked for a neighbor and he used to. And I was around 13, 14 at that time, a farmer. And I'd have to walk home. It was about a mile. And he usually made me work until it was dark. And then the lane that went in, there was corn on each side. And I tell you, brethren, sisters, tonight yet I declare somebody was running along the corn in there. And it didn't matter how fast I run, that creature could run as fast as I could. I heard him. But I don't think he was there. But to me, it was real. And as I look back, I think it could have been quite a help, you know, if my dad would have told me, Abner, I used to really be scared of the dark, but you know, never anything got me. Rather than just think, well, it's your stupid imagination, because I couldn't put my imagination to rest. It was there. Well, now I told you that part of history. Now, here's another one that might make you, oh, and by the way, not all of these were my thoughts. John, there was a man years ago in 1970 that wrote a little book about some of these things, and I remembered some of those. But there's one thing that he said in this little book I'll never forget. He said, I would stop if I would have my life to live over, my family, to bring up over again. I would stop praying for my wife and children. Now, what do you make of that? What do you think he meant? And I'm going to tell you something. When I realized what he was saying, it really spoke to me. I would stop praying for my wife and children. And what he was saying was this. He said he found out after these children were growing up and sitting at the table, he would always pray for his wife, that his wife could be strong, that she could find her place in the home, and that she would know how to teach and train the children. And then he would start on his children, and he would pray for their weaknesses and this and that. And he said, I never prayed for myself. And he said he realized all at once that one of the greatest things in standing in the need of prayer was himself and his place in the home. That spoke to me. And you know, I thought about that. Just simply praying for ourselves, so that we can make the wife and children a blessing, rather than think God is going to make them a blessing and we'll stay just like we were. You know, that's a selfish pride that needs to be dealt with. So that that thought of I would stop praying for my family does not mean that we don't pray for our family, but that's not that first priority that always comes up. But the need to see that we as a leader of the home have to have that in our lives. Now the next one I'd like to think of, and this is something I feel I fail very much, both with my wife and my children, and that is I would encourage them more. It does not matter, fathers. It doesn't matter for you to brag a little bit for your children. To your children. For your children, maybe I should say. I'm not talking flattery. But if they try to do a job and they don't get a job done quite right, encourage them. Lift them up. There's enough in the world to discourage our children without the fathers and mothers constantly just not bringing them up to a level where they can do something good. I remember thinking, and I go back to my family because of the situation, but I remember my time of times when I heard my father say to a neighbor, when the neighbor came and he looked at something, and I was just a young boy or a helper around the farm, and I remember my father a couple times that a neighbor would come or somebody would come and he'd say something to my dad about something there in the farm, and then I heard dad say, "Yeah, my son did that." Whew, boy, that feels good. Can we do that sometimes for our children? Or do we always just take away that thing and, well, they're just kids. They're just kids. It's just the kids. Don't mind the kids. Brethren and sisters, if you want your children to grow up feeling like they're worth something, and I think we should. I think we should train our children to know that they're worth something. A healthy self-respect. And to do that, we're going to have to encourage them. We're going to have to, even though they make mistakes, we did too. You know, sometimes we scold children. I'll tell you a story. My wife and I attended church with a father and a mother that had three little boys. And they were overzealous for those three little boys. And I don't think that I have ever before or since that, known a father that was so quick to take his boys out and wallop them during church to get them straightened up. I don't even want to tell you where their family is today. Now, why do I say that? Well, I do believe that there are times when we have to realize that little boys' pants feel like they have ants in them. And they just can't sit patient. And sure, they'll wiggle around and so on. Now, you may say, well, I'm pretty loose here. Sure, they'll wiggle around. But the answer is not just every little infraction like that to get straightened up. The answer is to do it right. And not just again and again and do it enough to really anger your children. And so, this encouragement, you know, we need to encourage them. And as they get into teenagers, that's needful more and more to encourage them. It's a job well done. Hey, you're doing good. I had three boys. I'll tell you what, it was such a blessing yesterday. I had three boys that Ida is now a mother to. And those boys have had some training. And they were a joy to work with. Just a joy to work with. They weren't overbearing. And I just told the boys last evening, I said, thank you so much for the wonderful job you did. And I think we need to do that to our own children too. You know, sometimes fathers, it's easier to give praise to some other ones. But our own are just left us. I'm going to tell you a little something. My sisters all remember this. But we were a family of blondes. Most of my sisters were blondes. Had a sister, one or two, that were more dark-haired. But for some reason, my father liked dark-haired girls. And I remember him coming home, and we'd be sitting at the table, and then he would be talking about this family that he visited with when he was in a ministry trip. And he said, they have the prettiest black-haired daughters. And I would look at my sisters, and they'd just be looking down. Wouldn't say a word. Their blonde hair sticking all out over their heads. And Dad said, they have the prettiest black-haired daughters. I don't think Dad realized at all what he was saying. But you know, it would have done so much for my sisters to hear Dad say, I just love those golden curls. You know what I'm saying? We do things like that, and we don't think about what it's doing. I'm sure my father didn't. And I'm sure I've made remarks like that. Maybe not like hair color, but, you know, we do things like that. We need to encourage. Sometimes we have boys that, and I'll go back to my family. My brother Mike, he was not a farmer. He was not a farmer. I used to get so upset at Mike. I was a boy right with him. We grew up together like twins. And Mike could take a team of horses in the field, and before you know it, he had a horse over the trace and rubbed raw and what. And I used to get so upset because he was not a farmer. And my father actually called him lazy. But do you know what? Dad was trying to make a farmer out of Mike. And once Mike got a hold of carpenter work, he outshone me by a mile. He was tremendous in that. He was a complete different boy. And I say this, parents, be very careful how you force your child into a work that he hates. Now, there are some things I know. I remember John Weaver telling me that anybody can love a job that pays good enough. And I told John Weaver, that's not true. I don't accept that. And I don't today yet. He can work it if it pays good enough, but he won't love it. And I say, when we encourage our children, we need to find out what they would like. I forced my girls in the bake shop for 17 years. And there's one sitting in church here that never loved it overly. But she did it. She did it. But I don't think we should force our children into something that just doesn't go for them. We need to be open enough to encourage them to find something that's going to be a blessing. Now the next one I'd like to turn a little attention to is this. A little attention to little things. We need to pay more attention. I should have paid more attention to little things. You know, the Bible tells us that if we're faithful in little things, He will give us charge of big things. And so we need to pay attention to little things. And children come with little things, especially small things. They come with things. You know, a girl, they want to be seen. They want to be noticed. And we don't have to flatter them. But just, you know, a girl, she gets a new dress. My grandchildren do this. They come and they tell me, Grandpa, did you see my dress? Well, what are you going to do? What are you going to say? Encourage her a little bit. You don't have to make a blooming flower out of her, but just tell her, hey, that's nice. You know, we had a little boy that went to school with our children, and they were rather from a poor family, and one time he got a pair of new shoes. And he went to school with Sue's brothers were going to school with my children at that time, and this boy came to church with new shoes on, and nobody said a word. And oh, he wanted people to see his new shoes. And he didn't know what to do, so finally he went around stamping on their toes, so they had to look down and see his shoes. Well, see, that was because the boy needed encouragement in little things. Just simply that he wanted somebody to say, oh, you got new shoes. They were clodhoppers, but to him they were great. You know, we do these little things, how they can help us. Pay attention to little things. I need to close. Didn't think I would go on this long this evening. Wanted to especially talk on one yet. And that, I'll just skip a few here. I'm not going to go through all of them. But the last one I'm going to talk about yet, I missed a couple, but that's all right. I would seek, this is my earnest yearning in my heart. I would seek to show Jesus Christ more intimately in my own life to my children and my wife. Oh, how I long that I would have done that. You say, well, how do you do that? Well, you know, that happens in everyday things in life. That happens when your temper is in a beautiful control. Not that you shouldn't have a temper. A man without a temper is not much of a man. But having that thing in check by the Spirit of God, and to share God with my family. I know my wife and I, from the time 40 some years ago, we hardly ever missed having devotions with our family. In fact, right now we miss it more, us too, than when the children are all home. But that's not necessarily the answer. The answer is showing Jesus Christ when we're in everyday shoe leather. The answer is, Kathy, when you have to pull a cow out of the manure pit and Dad is so anxious that that cow's not going to make it and you're driving the skid loader and you stall it off. That's when Christ needs to be shown up. My son Michael told me something. Maybe I told the church here, but I'll never forget. We were talking one day and I said to Michael, Michael, what was the most instant thing that comes to your mind when I hurt you? You know what he said? Well, he said, Dad, you probably don't remember, but the skid loader broke down and we had to get the cows fed and you had to fix the skid loader and you asked me to hold the light and you were working down in the gearbox in the skid loader. I didn't remember what he's talking about. I was listening. What's he going to say? And he said, I was holding the light. And you said, hold the light over here. Michael, hold the light over here. And then you took my hand and said, hold the light here. He said, that I'll never forget. And I knew myself. And I knew that was probably very true. And so, did I show Christ? No. But you know, our children, and that's just one little instance, and I'm sure that my children could show you a lot more. One thing that I saw in our 50th wedding anniversary was the notebook that the children got together. And two times it was written when Dad said, we're going to have to move the heifers. The girl said, oh no. You know, Christ can go along when you're moving the heifers too. And so those little things speak up. And they speak to our life. And they speak to mine. Now I know, dearly beloved, tonight, I can't go back. I can't change it. But I can encourage you, some of you younger ones. Our Lord Jesus is going to come. And it is my greatest desire that when the Lord comes, not just my children, but especially my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren can go to be with the Lord. That was one of John the Revelator's greatest cries, is that his children be faithful. And that's mine. May God bless this to our hearts.